Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Science, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Galina Limorenko, doctoral candidate in neuroscience with a focus on biochemistry and molecular biology of neurodegenerative diseases at the BFL in Switzerland, the host of the channel. Today we'll be talking to Edzard Ernst, the author of Chiropractic, Not All That It's Cracked Up to Be. Of all forms of alternative medicine, chiropractic is one that is most generally accepted. In the UK, for instance, chiropractors are regulated by statute and even have their own Royal College of Chiropractic. In the US, chiropractic's country of origin, most chiropractors carry the title doctor, and many consumers believe that they are medically trained. Despite this high level of acceptance, chiropractic is wide open to criticism. The claims and assumptions made by chiropractors are far from evidence-based. Chiropractic manipulations are of doubtful effectiveness and have regularly been associated with severe adverse effects, including multiple fatalities. The advice issued by chiropractors to patients and consumers is often less than responsible. The behavior of chiropractors and their organizations is frequently less than professional. This book presents and discusses recent evidence in and around chiropractic in a factual and unemotional manner. It amounts to an evidence-based critique of this profession and discloses the often dangerously misleading information published for the lay audience. It thereby contributes to advancing public health and critical thinking. Well, Edzard, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here today. So as we are living through these unprecedented times during pandemic, I would like to start by asking, how has it influenced you and your work?
Well, a great deal. And about a year ago, I came to France for a holiday, and then everything went so pear-shaped that I stayed for the rest of the year, and I'm still in France. So it has influenced the place where I live. And in France, we have been in confinement quite a lot. That actually meant I had lots more time to work, to write. So it has increased my productivity, I suppose.
Really? That's a bit unusual, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm unusual, but I have in the last year I have published 3 books, so that's much more than average.
So you already had a very high level of output, as it was, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you teach? Do you teach online courses?
No, I'm retired from university life, so I'm emeritus professor, and I have no teaching responsibilities anymore.
Excellent. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit more about your background?
Yes, I was born in Germany and I studied various things, psychology, which I didn't finish, medicine. I also trained in music. For a long time, I was a semi-professional musician. Then I became had my first post in as a young doctor was in a homeopathic hospital, so I was exposed to all sorts of alternative methods. Then I became quite a normal doctor, conventional doctor. Then about 10 years, I totally immersed into basic science. Did a lot of studies, published a lot of stuff in basic science. Then I returned into clinical medicine, became professor of rehabilitation medicine first in Hanover, Germany. Then I became chair of rehabilitation medicine in Vienna, Austria. And after about 4 years in Vienna, I saw this advertisement for the first chair in complementary medicine in England. I applied and I got that post. I moved to England and I worked for just about 20 years in Exeter, doing research into alternative medicine, building up a multidisciplinary team. We didn't have patients, so we had a little bit of teaching, not much, and were basically entirely focused on research into all sorts of alternative treatments, mainly acupuncture, homeopathy, herbal medicine, and homeopathy.
Interesting. So you started with homeopathy, then went into clinical practice, I suppose traditional one, and then you returned back to alternative. But overall, did you grow skeptical about the homeopathic medicine overall?
Well, as a clinician, initially I was very impressed. It was my first post ever. So the first time I had patients, and that is very exciting for any young doctor. So I was excited, I was impressed. Later, as I said, I became, I immersed into some basic science, which changed my life completely, my outlook. I began to think like a scientist, which you don't when you come out of medical school. Medics are not scientists. That is a big misunderstanding. Medics are also not taught how to think critically. We have no courses in critical thinking. All this came later. And as I was getting more critical, I also had a different outlook on to alternative medicine. When I took on the post in Exeter to research alternative medicine, I was trying to be as neutral as possible. And I think that is important for a scientist. That's what you have to be. Your main concern has to be that the science is rigorous, not that you're taking sides or that you're using science to prove your point, your testing points, not proving anything. That was very much an irritation to everybody who had expected a proponent of alternative medicine, which I clearly wasn't, but I wasn't also an enemy of alternative medicine. What made me a critic of this field was simply the results of our research and the results of research internationally when we did systematic reviews, meta-analysis, etc.
And yes, that's exactly, which is very appealing about both your book, but also your work, that neutrality, but also humility and being really rigorous to be able to provide or perhaps point, not the point of view, but something that's really based in evidence. So I really appreciated that. So can you perhaps describe a little bit more of what alternative medicine what type of alternative medicine there is. So you mentioned acupuncture, homeopathy.
Yeah, there are plenty of methodologies. People think of alternative medicine as treatment, and by and large that is true, but there are also there's a range of diagnostic methods which usually are not validated and are a great concern if you look into them, because they lead to false positive or false negative diagnosis. But mainly we are talking about treatment, and somebody counted 400 different treatments in this area. In Exeter, we tried to cover a lot, but we couldn't cover everything in this relatively short 20 years that we did the research. And we published about 1,000 papers on Medline on the subject. So we were hugely productive. I had a team of about 20 researchers. So it's not all to my hard work. It's mostly teamwork. And the range is huge. We're talking about physical treatments like massage therapy, chiropractic, osteopathy. For instance, we're talking about things that you take orally, like homeopathy or herbal medicine. We're talking about mind-body therapies and a lot of other things. And that is precisely the problem, because you cannot ever say alternative medicine is good, alternative medicine is bad, because you're talking about so many people, so many different treatments, and it would be just like saying conventional medicine is good or bad. There's some things that are good, some things that are bad, and that's precisely what I try to express in the book when I review the evidence for 20 treatments that are supported by evidence and 20 which I think are concerning.
That's an absolutely important distinction, that you cannot lump everything together. So that's it's a really great point. I was wondering, how was the response from the medical community to your papers, to your work? Were they receptive?
People were very skeptical about that post, both locally in Exeter, as well as nationally in the UK, as well as internationally, because there was a lot of press coverage and people got alerted to me being in that position and so forth. So lots of skepticism. And when people then started reading what I was publishing, they got a bit more friendly, except those who were in the camp of alternative medicine, they got a little bit worried and thought, this man is not supporting us, which, as I pointed out, I really wasn't. I was just trying to do good science and approach the truth as nearly as I could. So reactions were very divided, but by and large, the field of conventional medicine was supportive, even though that is a very gross generalization, and there was the whole spectrum really. But by and large, supportive.
That's great. That's great to hear. And I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know whether it's correct word to that some of the alternative practitioners were a bit defensive, weren't they?
Yes, they were worried. For instance, when I said that one of my most important research question was what are the risks associated with alternative medicine. They got extremely worried and thought, well, what is he talking about? The risks are with conventional medicine. If you think of cancer treatments, these treatments are risky, not our herbal treatments, not our homeopathic remedies. They are free of side effects. As it turns out, they were wrong, and we still know far too little about the risks of alternative treatments, but we know that the assumption that they are safe, totally safe, is certainly not true.
Excellent. So with all of this huge amount of experience and a lot of papers, so some of it culminated in this book, Chiropractic, which also has really, so the second name, what you have, not all that's cracked up to be. So this line really bothered me a little bit. So there's a warning. So when you watch the videos, how chiropractors do it on babies, you sometimes can actually hear this crack. So when I read the title of your book, that's exactly what I heard. So can you tell us why you called it this way?
Well, it's obviously a play on words, and I like to play with words where like to use a little bit of humor, a little bit of sarcasm sometimes, and it's nice that you hear the cracking of the spinal manipulation when you read the title of the book, but it actually means that the assumptions of chiropractors and the claims of chiropractors are, by and large, not supported by good evidence.
Yeah, it's a great title. It definitely captures attention. So can you tell us then, what is the chiropractic itself?
Well, chiropractic was invented about 120 years ago by a very strange guy in America. His name was Palmer, Daniel David Palmer, and he happened to manipulate the spine of somebody who was deaf. He couldn't hear that chap, and he manipulated the spine, and lo and behold, this chap could hear again. His second patient was somebody who had coronary heart disease, and he manipulated spine of this man, and the pain of the coronary heart disease had stopped. So he decided to investigate a little bit what this was all about, and he thought to find out that virtually every human condition is caused by what he called malalignment of the spine, or spinal subluxation. And in order to put the spine back into order, he claimed you need spinal manipulation, and he invented many techniques how to do that. And chiropractic became a treatment for virtually everything. That is something we see quite often in alternative medicine, that one particular treatment is the therapy for every human condition. That was the claim of chiropractors. Only one or two decades later did chiropractors actually begin to treat back pain. And nowadays, they mostly treat back pain, and the field of chiropractic is divided into two camps. One adhering to the gospel of D.D. Palmer, who said every human condition is related to subluxation, and the other camp being back pain specialists who say we only treat back pain, acute back pain, and chronic back pain. And if you look at the evidence, the first camp who treat everything, they're totally unsupported by sound evidence, and the other camp who say we can effectively treat BACs are supported by a little bit of evidence, but really not very good evidence and not as strong as chiropractors try to make us believe.
Something that was really interesting for me is about Palmer, that all of this chiropractic that he started was more like one-man show in the beginning. So he was the main guy, who could say, but he seemed to be quite a believer in all of it.
Yeah, yeah. That is practically always the case with alternative medicine. You can trace back almost all of these treatments to one single person. With homeopathy, it was Hahnemann. With osteopathy, it is a guy called Andrew Still. With chiropractic, it is D.D. Palmer. These are like gurus who invent something and become quasi-religious believers into their own invention. They propagate their own treatment as a cure-all, as a panacea.
That's an excellent point. And actually, a little bit more on that point as well with regards to patients. So in your book, you have like a really excellent letter printed. So I would like to read it. It's really short. So that's the letter from Harvey Lillard. So the person that you mentioned who was cured from deafness. So he writes, "I was deaf 17 years and I expected to always remain so. For I had doctored a great deal without any benefit. I had long ago made up my mind to not take any more ear treatments, for it did me no good. Last January, Dr. Palmer told me that my deafness came from an injury in my spine. This was new to me, but it is a fact that my back was injured at the time I went deaf. Dr. Palmer treated me on the spine, and in two treatments, I could hear quite well. That was 8 months ago. My hearing remains good." So this was in the issue of 1897. But reading it, it actually looks like any comments that you can find even today, nowadays, on the testimony pages of all of these alternative treatments. So how come this sort of persisted? Because we don't see something like this in medicine.
Yes. In real medicine, we gave up relying on testimonials a long, long time ago, because testimonials can be invented, they can be influenced by other factors, and this testimonial that you just read out is particularly funny because it is totally implausible that manipulating the neck influences deafness in any sort of way. You need to know a little bit about anatomy, but the nerve supply of the inner ear, by which you hear, doesn't go through the spine at all. So you can do whatever you want to a human spine. Whatever you do, it cannot possibly influence hearing. You can break somebody's neck and paralyze that person. He will still be hearing, unless he's dead.
And even more to the point, Harvey was surprised that he had a spinal injury during the time he lost his hearing. So yeah, so a little bit odd. So then coming to nowadays. Where and how many chiropractors are there? So with regards to, if we compare it to the medical field, compared to number of doctors, are there many chiropractors or not that many?
Well, in some countries, chiropractic as a profession is not even legal, is not allowed. In some countries, there are plenty of chiropractors, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands in America. I guess in the UK, we have chiropractors who are regulated by statute, just like doctors. They have their the official standing and regulation and control bodies, just like doctors, but there are much fewer in the UK than doctors, and in Germany there are also not many chiropractors. There are more osteopaths in Germany. So it really depends on which country you're talking about. Worldwide, there are many hundred thousand chiropractors.
And how does chiropractor differ from osteopath?
That's a good question. The D.D. Palmer went on a course to learn osteopathy, which was generated by, as I mentioned already, Andrew Still, around the same time. And chiropractors deny this, but D.D. Palmer actually stole much of his knowledge from osteopaths. And then he changed it. And today it's quite complicated because osteopaths in America are proper doctors. They can become neurologists, gynecologists, etc., etc. They have arranged themselves, the two professions, and there's hardly any difference at all. Anywhere else, and particularly in Europe, osteopaths are alternative practitioners, and they have, depending on what the national rules are, some sort of training, but they're not nearly trained as thoroughly in medicine as conventional doctors. So the difference between the two professions, between the two alternative practitioners of chiropractic and osteopathy, is that osteopaths generally use much softer techniques. And that is important because that makes them far less dangerous than the chiropractors. Chiropractors use techniques, particularly in the upper spine, which can injure the upper spine in a way that an artery breaks up and then you have a stroke. And if you're really unlucky, you die of that stroke. So chiropractic is much more dangerous than osteopathy.
And, right, so I've never been to chiropractic. So for people who haven't actually experienced it, can you describe why would I go there and what would I expect to find?
Well, you can have many reasons to go there. Some chiropractors advertise that they can treat anything. They consider themselves as primary care physicians. They treat little children and they treat infections. They treat earache. They treat asthma. They treat virtually everything. And the other camp of chiropractors, which nowadays dominates in most countries, they consider themselves as back specialists. So if you have neck or back pain, you would go and see a chiropractor. The chiropractor would manually investigate your spine, the mobility of your spine. Most likely he or she would diagnose some subluxation, and then he would do a spinal manipulation, for which there are various techniques and even devices in order to reposition the spine. The thing is, subluxations don't even exist. That is pretty clear today. And chiropractors treat something in your spine which doesn't exist. That is quite important to know. And therefore, it is not very surprising that their treatments are not very effective. There's a placebo effect, of course. There's the expectation that a patient goes to a chiropractor, has heard good things of chiropractic, and expects to get better, and therefore does get better. But the manipulation is not very effective. A little bit, perhaps, for back pain, for neck pain, the danger outweighs the benefit, and therefore I would certainly not advise anybody to go to a chiropractor who's suffering from neck pain. For chronic back pain, for acute back pain, perhaps you might want to see a chiropractor. But that's about it. If you have anything else, don't go to a chiropractor. Also, their advice is dangerous. They advise quite often against vaccination, for instance.
You mentioned this word subluxation. Can you define what it means?
Well, D.D. Palmer postulated that the spinal joints are dislocated, not quite dislocated, but slightly dislocated, and he called this a subluxation. Today we know that this was pure fantasy, and subluxations do not exist. Chiropractors use all sorts of diagnostic methods, including x-ray, to diagnose subluxation, but you can test how accurate they are in diagnosing it, and the consensus, the scientific consensus, is that subluxations do not exist.
It's great to know. It is a very nicely sounding word, I would say. So you mentioned that chiropractors often use other alternative modalities. And why would that be?
Well, I suppose chiropractors know the evidence, perhaps not everything about the evidence. They see it much more rosy than I have been presenting it. But they cannot escape the fact that there is, let's say, doubt about the effectiveness of spinal manipulation. So what do they do? They say, okay, we use all sorts of other things as well. We use advice about posture, we use advice about exercise, we use heat treatments, we use ultrasound treatment, etc., etc. So basically, what they do when they adopt these methodologies, they steal the toolkit from physiotherapists, because all these treatments that I've described are basically the treatments that physiotherapists use. So in a sense, they become physiotherapists, except they're not as well trained as physiotherapists, except they do spinal manipulation far too often, which, as I tried to explain, can be quite dangerous, and they don't have the scope of a physiotherapist who can do lots of other things, for instance, in intensive care, mobilize patients, etc., etc. So they become amateur physiotherapists in a way, by realizing that their spinal manipulation is not nearly as good as they pretend to be.
Have you yourself ever been to a chiropractic?
I have learned how to do chiropractic. Of course, I have been manipulated by a chiropractor, yes. Maybe not by a chiropractor, but by physiotherapists do that also quite a lot. Spinal manipulation, but they, when a physiotherapist uses spinal manipulation, he or she doesn't believe that he's curing subluxations. He doesn't believe in the mythical assumptions of D.D. Palmer, which chiropractors, they often still believe in.
Interesting. So you gathered some data of one, at least.
Yes, yes.
So you mentioned there are quite a few risks of chiropractic practice itself. So what are the ways it can be regulated to protect the patients who can be perhaps victims of the practice?
Yeah, that's a good point. In some countries, chiropractors are regulated. I already mentioned in the UK, they're regulated by statute, which means there's a governing body, the General Chiropractic Council, as it is called in the UK, and they have the duty to safeguard the public. But it is more than debatable, I think, whether that duty is actually fulfilled. If we had a couple of years ago, we had a case where tragically an elderly man went to a chiropractor, even though he had back pain, lower back pain. The chiropractor manipulated his upper spine, which they often do. They see the spine as one organ, and if you have, according to their diagnostic methods, subluxation in the upper spine, they will manipulate it. So this elderly man got manipulated and basically died of that manipulation. He had a stroke and died, and it was a very, very clear case of malpractice in my view, from several points of view. For instance, he hadn't declared informed consent. She hadn't told the patient what the risks are, etc., etc. And we know all this because he wasn't alone. His wife was with him. And what happened? What did the regulator do? Did the regulator say that was wrong? And did they take off the license of the chiropractor? Nothing of the sort. So what I'm trying to say, the function and the duty of the regulator to regulate chiropractic properly is lacking to a great extent. It's debatable whether they do their job properly.
So that's something that really bothers me about chiropractic itself, because it's really unclear where the practice lies in between medicine and wellness industry, how it is regulated when things go wrong. So, for example, if you go to doctor, you know, you're protected against malpractice. But chiropractic, as you just described, can really bring tangible, really, really dire effects on the patients. So in your view, what is needed to regulate it? For example, in regards to vulnerable patients like elderly and children as well?
Yes, you need a proper regulator like other healthcare professionals have, and they are properly regulated. Nurses, physiotherapists, dentists, doctors. And as I explained, in the UK we have that, but the function isn't carried out properly, at least in my view not. In other countries we don't have a regulator at all of chiropractic, because they're not regulated by statute. They self-regulate, so they have a professional body, and if you want to complain, you can complain to that professional body, but this is very unsatisfactory. What is needed, one of the first steps that would be needed is to have a proper record of adverse effects. When things go wrong in medicine, you have to record these things. This is how we know about rare side effects of drugs, for instance. We have a system where we report side effects. This doesn't exist in chiropractic, even though we know that about 500 patients have had very severe complications of chiropractic. Yet, there's no reporting system. So that would be the very first step. And the fact that even in the UK, where we have a proper, so-called proper regulator of chiropractic, even in the UK, we don't have such a system of reporting side effects, just reinforces my point that even in the UK, chiropractic is not properly and adequately regulated.
So what is the public outlook on the chiropractic, you think? So from your point of view, how are public perceiving it?
In the UK and even more so in America, chiropractors are seen as very conventional, very established practitioners. In America, they call themselves doctor, doctor of chiropractic, or just doctor. So a patient doesn't necessarily know that he or she is seeing a practitioner who has never been to medical school. That old man who I mentioned, who died after a chiropractic intervention, thought he was going to a doctor because she called herself Dr. So-and-so, and that was in the UK, where this is not even allowed. So your question was the public. How does the public perceive chiropractors? I think the public gets a totally wrong picture of chiropractic. They think they are just like doctors, only specialized perhaps in backs, and they're fully qualified, they're very well regulated, etc., etc. None of this is the case. But chiropractors obviously do everything they can to create that image. Why do they do it? Because it's good for business.
So what would be your best advice on how to speak about chiropractic to your friends and family?
The best advice, I think, comes from an American neurologist who said, don't let the buggers touch your neck. My advice would be, if somebody asked me, should I see a chiropractor, I would just say no. Whatever you have, if you have back problems, see a physiotherapist, see an orthopedic surgeon, whatever. If you have anything else, chiropractors are totally inadequate to treat anything else than backs. And even for backs, they're not nearly the best.
So is it fair to say that your ideal world does not include chiropractic at all?
Yes, I think chiropractic is a profession that, even though it seems very well established, it has not really a established place in healthcare anywhere, not for treating backs and certainly not for treating other things.
That's great. So I'm sure that our listeners are going to find reading your book, Chiropractic, not all that it's cracked up to be. Ooh, this title is just perfect. So, Edzard, we've taken up a lot of your time, and I would like to ask, what are you working on now?
I've just finished a book, that book is on alternative medicine, very broadly, not one particular alternative medicine, but any alternative medicine, but for one particular indication, and that is cancer. So alternative medicine for cancer, it's actually called so-called alternative medicine, in brackets, SCAM. This is how how I abbreviated today, so-called alternative medicine for cancer. This is on the background for this is that there is hardly a single cancer patient anywhere who is not bombarded with information about alternative medicine. Use this alternative medicine and it will cure your cancer. Well, the claim that anything can cure cancer within the umbrella of alternative medicine is just simply wrong. And that is something I feel needs to be explained to the public. So I go through all these treatments that are claimed to be cancer cures in alternative medicine. But the book would be entirely negative, and I don't like writing an entirely negative book. So there actually may be a place for alternative medicine in cancer, and that is in cancer care, in palliative cancer care, where you can use some of the alternative treatments to improve the quality of life of cancer patients. You're not aiming at curing cancer. That has hopefully been done, and you're now looking at improving the quality of life of cancer patients, easing their pain, relaxing, supporting their sleep ability, supporting their ability to gain weight again if they have lost weight, etc. So. It's a book in two parts. One is very negative. I'm warning people of alternative cancer cures, and then in the second part, I'm presenting the evidence to show that some alternative treatments can actually help cancer patients who have survived cancer, or indeed who are terminal, and in some cases even the quality of death might be improved by adding some alternative treatments to the toolkit of medicine.
That sounds really interesting, and I'm hoping that you're going to come back and talk to us about your next book.
It's going to be published probably later this year, and it's also like the chiropractic book. It's also with Springer, so. The same publisher, and once it's out there, you easily find it on Amazon or other outlets.
Excellent. And where can our listeners find about your work and your papers?
I'm writing a blog, which we haven't mentioned. I'm virtually every day writing something on my blog, and that you can find just by my name, Edzard Ernst, without dot or without interruption.com, and then you're on my blog, and on this blog you can see now over 2,000 articles that I've written, so it's plenty to read, and you can search by treatments. You can search, for instance, homeopathy, and you find several hundred articles on homeopathy. What I usually do on the blog, when somebody has published a new paper on, for instance, homeopathy, I look at this paper and I summarize what has been found, and I criticize where necessary the methodology, or I say that's a good paper and that's a sound piece of evidence. So it's updating everybody on their area of interest if they have an interest in alternative medicine.
It's a really great resource for everybody interested. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. That was really interesting and I learned a lot.
My pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy your weekend.